Welcome. You are listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, and this is Rabbi Elliot Cosgrove. While it's always better to hear it live, this is a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. Enjoy our latest installment.
Shabbat Shalom. When Valdemar Hafkine would sit in synagogue to hear this morning's Torah reading, Tazria Mitzora, I have to imagine that it brought a big smile to his face. After all, to the degree that there is a biblical precedent to WebMD, this week's Parsha is it, ancient Israel's medical textbook as to how to diagnose and address the outbreak of a plague. In the time of the Torah, the Kohen, the priest, was both the religious and the medical authority of the community, the urgent care professional when a person found him or herself afflicted with a debilitating condition. Our Torah reading describes how the Kohen would visit the afflicted, examine them, diagnose their condition, and based on what he saw, prescribe a course of action. But the Kohen was more than just a first responder. He was also the public health official. The afflicted individual was put into quarantine as a broader community was informed of the outbreak. Had the plague spread throughout the household, spread beyond that one home? Depending on the answer, extra measures were mandated for anyone who came into contact with the afflicted, and depending on how bad things were, that person's house could even be torn down. Finally, in his quasi-governmental role, the priest would signal the path by which that individual, once healed, could be reintegrated into society and society itself return to normalcy. For young Valdemar Hafkine, a man who would spend his life in the service of eradicating deadly plagues, Tazria Mitzora must have been the scriptural and spiritual foundation for the ventures and adventures that would inform his life work. This morning, I want to offer you a different kind of sermon. I want to tell you about a person, Valdemar Hafkine, a man whom I would guess most of you know nothing about, a person about whom I knew nothing about, until I began to do a little digging into one of the most underappreciated, inspiring, and tragic figures in the history of Jewish epidemiology, a sermon that I would like to dedicate in honor of the medical professionals serving on the front lines of our present-day public health crisis. Our story begins, as do so many Jewish stories, in Tsarist Russia, Odessa to be precise, where Valdemar Mordechai Wolf Hafkine was born in 1860, the same year, interestingly, as Theodor Herzl. Valdemar's mother died when he was but 8 years old, and his father, a struggling merchant, enrolled young Valdemar in a local school at the age of 10, and at the age of 19, he entered Odessa's Faculty of Natural Science to study zoology under Elie Metchnikoff, a future Nobel Prize winner in the field of immunology. If you know your Jewish history, then you know that Russia in the 1880s was not an easy time or place to be a Jew. The anti-Semitic pogroms that broke out following the assassination of Tsar Alexander II took a terrible toll on our people, with many Jews immigrating westward and a far smaller number following their hearts eastward in what would be the first wave of immigration, the first Aliyah to the land of Palestine. Hafkine himself dreamt of social revolution, and though he wasn't personally involved in the assassination plot, he was a card-carrying member of the terrorist revolutionary group Narodnaya Volya, the will of the people that was. Young Hafkine wasn't a religious man, but he did have a very strong sense of his Jewish identity, and he was a member of the Jewish League for Self-Defense. Given his activism, not surprisingly, Hafkine was expelled from university twice, and he was arrested three times by the Russian authorities, released only by way of the intervention of his mentor, Professor Metchnikoff. Principled as he was, Hafkine refused to convert to Christianity, a choice that would have paved his way towards attaining the coveted professorship he so wanted. He came to understand that he would have to leave Russia in order to advance his research career. At the time, Paris-based Louis Pasteur was opening up an entire branch of science to combat the devastating 19th century cholera outbreaks that were ravaging Asia and Europe. In 1888, Hafkine arranged passage from Russia to Switzerland, and eventually by 1890, he arrived in Paris, where his old mentor Metchnikoff was working in the newly opened Pasteur Institute. And it's here where our story on a certain level really begins. But before we step forward, we need to take a small step back to provide some context for those of you who, like myself, have absolutely no medical training. When faced with the outbreak of infectious disease, there are, broadly speaking, two baskets of response. The first basket aims to control the epidemic, which, aside from the preventative health measures like sanitation and physical distancing as prescribed by our parsha and the governor, is a world of inoculations to prevent the outbreak of an epidemic. Think of Edward Jenner and the smallpox vaccine, or Jonas Salk and the polio vaccine as announced at the University of Michigan, or the common flu shot. The second basket of responses aims to control the disease itself. The steps that one takes to help arrest and ease the symptoms of the afflicted with the goal of reducing the mortality rate. Here, think of the discovery of penicillin by the great Scotsman Alexander Fleming, or streptomycin by the American Jew Selman Waksman, stemming the devastating toll of tuberculosis in his day, or our frantic present-day efforts aimed to treat the effects of COVID-19. In this basket, I recall that when I was a kid, when my mother would kick me and my brothers out of the house on a Sunday so she could have some peace and quiet, we would all go to hang out at my dad's doctor's office, and I remember watching him taking a patient's bacteria sample and put it on a culture plate and take tiny discs of antibiotics, Cipro, ampicillin, and otherwise, and incubate it, and then measure the circle area around the antibiotic in order to determine which one would combat the bacterial infection, something that's called the zone of inhibition, the name for the technical measure by which bacteria colonies do or do not grow, or in retrospect, that children of doctors are inhibited from growing or not growing into doctors themselves. Hafkine's interest was in the first category. He was a prophet of prophylactic inoculations, and through a series of networking moves worthy of Joseph in Pharaoh's court, he figured out a way to get himself, a Jew from Odessa, this is amazing, this whole story is amazing, to be sent in 1893 by the British government to India, which was at the time suffering from an outbreak, a devastating outbreak of cholera, a disease that had killed millions. Hafkine faced local opposition, who were understandably suspect of his motives, and he survived an assassination attempt by Islamic extremists. I'm not making any of this up. No medical research would be possible without human trials. So Hafkine inoculated himself with live mitigated cholera bacteria. And though he suffered fever and discomfort, to make a long story short, was eventually able to gain the trust of his colleagues, local Indian leadership, and by 1895 had inoculated tens of thousands of people, saving countless lives. His success was overwhelming, but Hafkin himself was exhausted, and he had actually contracted malaria along the way. He returned home to Europe and was showered with praise for his self-sacrifice, his scientific zeal, and his courage of conviction, with Hafkin himself attributing all of his success to Louis Pasteur. And here is where things get really interesting and tragic. In 1896, Hafkin returned to India, only this time not for cholera, but for the scourge of plague that had broken out in India by way of a rat-infested ship that had arrived from Hong Kong. Working 14-hour days, Hafkin once again set up a laboratory in order to create the vaccine, which, having proved successful in animals, as was Hafkin's custom, was then first used on him. Though far from perfect, his vaccine worked, diminishing the death rate from the plague by as much as 80 to 90%. Hafkin's plague prophylactic was improved upon and administered throughout India, his discovery saving millions of lives. Throughout it all, in all these years in India, Hafkin's devotion to his people, the Jewish people, never wavered. In the early 1890s, he founded a society for the revival of the Hebrew language. He supported the efforts to open a plague hospital for Jews of every denomination in Bombay. And perhaps most fascinatingly, he worked behind the scenes to urge the Turkish Sultan to settle Jews in Palestine, keeping a correspondence with Baron Edmund James de Rothschild on the goal of establishing a Jewish homeland. So where's the tragedy? Well, it came in 1902. Hafkin's Bombay lab, where his plague vaccine was being produced. That September, five batches arrived in the village of Mulkawal in the Punjab in November, and the recipients of the vaccine from one contaminated flask, 53N, resulted in 19 deaths. In the years to come, the truth emerged that it would have been physically impossible for the contamination to have occurred in Hafkin's lab months earlier. Rather, the contamination had actually happened when an assistant at the Mulkawal lab dropped his forceps on the ground and used the non-sterile instrument, thus resulting in the tragic deaths. But that truth was only found out years later. Hafkin was suspended from his post and pay and endured a four-year investigation that held him to be culpable. Unofficially, the inquiry was referred to as the Little Dreyfus Affair, a reference to the Jewish-French military officer falsely accused of treason just a few years earlier. As told by Marina Sorokina, Hafkin's, quote, origin and independent scientific, civil, and religious views did not find acceptance within the British colonial bureaucracy. In the years ahead, Hafkin, together with some of his defenders, mounted a vigorous defense, eventually leading to the overturning of the decision and his exoneration and reinstatement in 1907, allowing him to return to India in 1908. But by then, a little like Dreyfus, the damage had been done. The stigma of the Mulkawal disaster remained, the terms of Hafkin's future employment restricted, and his research activities curtailed, but one of his 15 papers published were published during these years. And upon reaching the minimum age of retirement of 55 in 1915, he would leave the Indian civil service altogether. From 1915 until his death in 1930, Hafkin lived a quiet life, largely ignored by the scientific community. Hafkin turned his attention to Jewish causes, having been deprived throughout his career of intimacy with his kinsmen. He wanted to return to his faith and tradition. He traveled around Europe and America, seeking to establish schools of Jewish learning in Palestine and the diaspora that could bridge the gap between faith and reason. Having never returned in 40 years, he paid a final visit to his hometown of Odessa. He wrote a fascinating article on Jewish identity, on the nature of Jewish peoplehood, which was later canonized in the Hertz Pentateuch, which, if you're interested, is the essay assigned to my Tuesday morning class. You're invited. And when he died in Switzerland in 1930, he left his entire estate of 1.5 million francs, about $500,000, towards fostering religious, scientific, and vocational education in Eastern European yeshivas, stipulating that their curricula be expanded, quote, so that their students not be reduced to misery and begging. A tragic legacy, given what we know would become the ultimate fate of his beneficiaries just a few years later. The life of Waldemar Hafkin, from revolutionary terrorist to life-saving epidemiologist to malign Jew to scholar philanthropist. It would take years for Hafkin's legacy to be restored. The Bombay Plague Research Laboratory renamed in his honor, a few stamps, Israeli and Indian, issued in his name, a memorial grove in Jerusalem planted in his memory, a laboratory flask bearing his name, and yes, the millions and millions and millions of people who would never have been born had it not been for him, which I suppose, if there is one, the enduring and altogether relevant message of Hafkin for us today. In our day, literally, when we stand face to face with a pandemic, the likes of which we've never contended, we would do well to pause, to consider, and to reflect with gratitude, deep gratitude, for those doctors, nurses, and healthcare professionals and researchers and otherwise whose inglorious commitment to the preservation of life speaks to our highest ideals, not just as Jews, but as human beings. As one attendee would reflect at Hafkin's funeral, great was his scientific work in that he literally saved millions of lives, but equally great was a personal character of the man, and most particularly his modesty and humility. He never asked for help from any man, and he was always ready to help others and befriend the needy. It's an epitaph to which anyone devoted to the advancement of medicine should aspire. For that matter, it's a sentence and sentiment to which any human being would be lucky to be attached. As Longfellow wrote, lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime. Waldemar Hafkin was such a man. May his memory inspire us to aspire for the same in our own day. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you for listening to Park Avenue Podcasts, a place to be to catch the music, sermons, and select programs of Park Avenue Synagogue. If you like what you are hearing or want to learn more about the community, please check out our website at www.pasyn.org. See you in shul. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. Hallelujah.